From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Hundreds of otherwise healthy young people are suffering from a serious lung injury that seems to be linked to vaping. It's heightening concerns about the ubiquity of e-cigarettes, especially amongst teenagers, so we'll talk about that a lot a little later this hour. But first today, let's talk about Hurricane Dorian and the almost unimaginable devastation it has wrought on the Bahamas and where Hurricane Dorian is headed next. And if you're anywhere in Dorian's path, we'd like to know what you're seeing or have seen and experienced. Now, you'll remember that when Dorian went over the Bahamas, it was a Category 5 hurricane at that time, and it stalled over the Bahamas for more than 24 hours. Staying at a Category 5, the images that we're seeing out of the Bahamas are almost unimaginable. Total devastation in parts of the islands. Here's Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Minnis in a news conference yesterday saying the Bahamas faces, quote, one of the greatest national crises in our country's history. And then he said this.
Of the 25 individuals that were transported to New Providence, two has already succumbed. That would take the number of deaths to 7. And again, I want to assure and inform the Bahamian population that we can expect more deaths to be recorded.
That's the Prime Minister of the Bahamas, Hubert Minnis. Well, joining us now from Nassau in the Bahamas is Morgan Chesky, NBC News correspondent. Morgan, welcome to On Point, and tell us, what have you seen?
Hi, Meghna. It has been just a wild past 36 hours here in the Bahamas as Dorian has showed the true devastation that it's brought to, specifically the northern islands here. And you just heard from the Prime Minister, we are outside the hospital here in Nassau where those victims from Abaco Island have been brought via military helicopter to ambulances here on New Providence Island, and then they have been receiving much-needed medical care here. And following that statement by the Prime Minister, he went on to add that death toll number will likely be going up in the days ahead, which is striking because in his past, he was a physician. So whenever I spoke to him, he says this hits him especially hard because he knows just how much damage a hurricane can bring. But following that, he says that in his lifetime here in the Bahamas, he's never seen such a powerful storm strike with such fury for such a sustained amount of time. And that's really what has set Dorian apart. It hit Abaco Island, where it first made landfall, with wind gusts recorded of more than 220 miles an hour and a sustained wind of about 175 miles an hour. Keep in mind that the EF3 tornado was bringing speeds of about that same amount, but only for seconds or minutes at a time, whereas Dorian was bringing these winds for hours, leveling everything in its path. As it stands right now, this is one of the first days that relief and rescue efforts are really beginning in earnest on both fronts, simply because Dorian left remnants of dangerous conditions both in the air and on the seas that kept a lot of people from approaching those hard-hit areas on Grand Bahama and on Abaco Island. And we're now seeing that agencies are able to go into Abaco with food, with clean drinking water, to help the 5,000 or 6,000 people, many of which are now homeless in that area. And they're also trying to approach Grand Bahama, where flooding is a significant concern today.
Right. So Grand Bahama, I'm seeing here, at least 3 out of every 4 homes on Grand Bahama underwater, the airport under 6 feet of water, and Abaco Island, as you've mentioned a couple of times, Morgan. I mean, the aerial footage that we're seeing coming out of there, it's unrecognizable as a place of habitation and civilization, totally pulverized. So billions of dollars, at the very least, of damage here. What additional help does the Bahamas need? And, can that aid make its way in?
I think from a help standpoint, they need absolutely every bit of help they can get on multiple fronts. This is an unprecedented storm that has done catastrophic damage to these islands to the point where they may never look the same simply because of the power of Dorian. A lot of these uninhabited smaller islands that have been covered by that storm surge, even after Dorian passes, may never be seen again. From a resource standpoint, of course you have those emergency aid agencies going in to help those people on the ground. But the Prime Minister saying that, you know, this is a process that will take years to recover from, especially when you hear the early reports that about half of all buildings on Abaco and Grand Bahama are either damaged or destroyed. You mentioned billions. I don't disagree with that number at all, but I think it's very important to note that even though these agencies are just now getting in, we won't truly know the devastation that Dorian has brought to a lot of these areas for days or even weeks to come, simply because the damage is so severe. A lot of these spots are still inaccessible at this point in time. We do know that airstrips are being cleared off of debris, but there's not much you can do whenever you have floodwaters that are covering, as you mentioned, that airport runway in Freeport, which is still submerged. We've seen videos of the police station there flooded. So first responders who are here in the Bahamas facing the same struggles as many of the Bahamian people are from the wrath of Dorian.
Wow. Well, Morgan Chesky, NBC News correspondent, joining us from Nassau in the Bahamas. Morgan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Magna.
So obviously the Bahamas have weeks, months, even years of recovery ahead of the islands. But Hurricane Dorian is now moving towards the east coast of the United States. It has been downgraded from that previous Category 5 rating. But here's Jacksonville, Florida Mayor Lenny Curry urging residents to remain vigilant about Hurricane Dorian. He spoke yesterday.
This is no time to rest and think that everything's going to be okay. This is still a very serious storm effects that are going to come through our coast and could affect low-lying inland areas.
Well, joining us now is Lindsay Kilbride, reporter for WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida. Lindsay, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what are you seeing there in Jacksonville and how is Florida preparing for what might come with Dorian?
Well, as you know, it's been a slow crawl, this hurricane, so we're all sort of just waiting at this point. There's a lot of evacuations, mandatory evacuations. Two big zones here in Jacksonville had mandatory evacuations. I know that's the same for almost all coastal cities in Florida and up into Georgia as well. So it's kind of a question if people are actually heeding those calls. I know we've had a few big storms over the past few years. You know, there were a lot of Category 5 hurricanes in the Atlantic in 2006, 2007, but then it was almost a decade until Matthew in 2016 when we really saw this again. And then since Matthew, it's just been Irma, Maria, Michael, now Dorian. Mm-hmm. So at least Matthew and Irma really impacted Jacksonville. And people are sort of just comparing this storm to what's it going to be most like? Is it going to be like Irma, where we saw a lot of inland flooding? We saw, you know, areas that never thought they would get flooding. Their houses just filling up with water in sort of like the northwest area of Jacksonville. I think you mostly expect it at the beach, which is what we saw with Matthew. It's looking like it's going to be closer to something like Matthew because it is skirting the outside of Florida, whereas Irma kind of went kind of southwest over Florida. So we were on the storm's east side, and that brought some really unique conditions that we're not seeing this time. But, you know, we're just kind of waiting it out. I mean, we've been waiting for so long to see, like, is it coming? Is it going to impact us? We're still going to see that flooding. We're going to see really, really high surf, and it's really going to probably impact the more coastal beach areas, which is what happened during Matthew.
Sorry to interrupt there, Lindsay, but I was just going to ask you to remind us sort of what the impact of Matthew was. If it seems like, at least where you are in Florida right now, Dorian might be a little bit more like that.
Sure. So with Matthew, it really impacted a city just south of us, which is in our listening area as well, which was St. Augustine, with that, we had just entire roads, just chunks of roads on the coast just missing, just being pummeled by the water. A lot of businesses and homes were flooded as well. So we already see a lot of beach, a lot of the sand is being eroded really badly, even just overnight, even though it's not even here yet. So I think people are kind of thinking more of the beach areas are going to be impacted.
I see. Now, I'm seeing reports here, meteorological reports that say that the Carolinas might be facing a triple threat of high winds, flooding, rain, and storm surges. And as you said, it maybe perhaps not that bad in Jacksonville right now, but still, as the mayor said, no time to relax here. Are there evacuations going on, or have they been going on in Jacksonville?
Yeah, so evacuations were ordered earlier this week, I believe Sunday afternoon for Jacksonville, and then some of the other cities ordered the same on Sunday and Monday as well. I would say that we are expecting some of the same conditions, 65 mile per hour gusts along the coast. But it's a little different story inland, which is sort of like 40 mile hour gusts. But sustained winds of 35, 54 miles per hour is what the latest I've heard from the National Weather Service meteorologist that's here in Jacksonville. So that's kind of what we're expecting. Obviously, like the storm surge is probably expected to be half of what we saw during Irma, which is good news because that is really what impacted people in Jacksonville. I mean, a lot of people's homes were destroyed, just completely gutted. I mean, it really impacted some of these low income communities in the Northwest area who never expected it. And just, you know, like a nearby tributary completely overflowed and their homes were waist deep. We don't think that's going to happen this time, which is good news, but it's still going to be a lot higher than normal. Right now, we already have some really high levels in our river. We just don't have these other conditions Irma brought, we had an incredible amount of rainfall. We had this big south, push of wind that just completely drenched us.
So, Lindsay, we just have about a minute here left to go. And you named all those storms, those big name storms. And I'm thinking at the same time hurricane season is by no means over this year. I mean, have these, the frequency of these big storms, I mean, how has it changed life in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, is our city sustainable with the sea level rise with these new storms? So it's definitely something that they're calling on local officials to take notice of and take seriously.
Well, Lindsay Kilbride, reporter for WJCT, an NPR member station serving northeastern Florida. She's with us from Jacksonville, Florida. Lindsay, thank you so much and definitely stay safe.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, we will talk about this mysterious vaping-related illness that some doctors are saying may be turning into an epidemic. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about a spike in reports of a vaping-related illness. It's including severe shortness of breath, vomiting, fever, fatigue, CT scans revealing young lungs filled with cysts and nodules. Now, doctors so far have reported more than 200 people across the country with this mysterious lung illness that seems to be linked with vaping. There's been one fatality thus far in Illinois, and public health officials in Oregon said last night they're investigating another death they think could have been caused by this vaping-related illness. Now, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration say they are working tirelessly to get to the root of a seemingly new respiratory disease, but there's still a lot of questions about exactly what's causing it and if that means something about the safety of vaping and e-cigarettes. So we want to hear from you. Do you vape? What are your questions? What are your questions for health experts about this vaping-related illness? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Ilana Jaspers. She is a professor of pediatrics, microbiology, and immunology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She's a toxicologist and the deputy director of the UNC Center for Environmental Medicine, Asthma, and Lung Biology. Professor Jaspers, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Also, sure, my pleasure.
Yeah, and also with us from Queens, New York is Dr. Melody Peraza. She's the chief of pediatric pulmonology at New York University's Winthrop Hospital on Long Island. Dr. Peraza, Peraza, forgive me.
Okay.
Dr. Peraza, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. So first of all, Dr. Peraza, have you seen cases of this vaping-related illness?
Yes, I have. I have seen two cases mid-July who presented very different ways. One of them presented with acute respiratory distress and had a very rough ICU admission, full life support for 1 week, and he's doing well now. And the second case is more of a chronic exposure for 3 months to vaping, and he had weight loss up to 25 pounds in 3 months and cough and fever and nodules in the lungs.
Okay. And so how is it that it seems as if we hadn't heard of a cluster of cases before now? Is there something about vaping recently that has suddenly made all these pop up?
Well, that is a million-dollar question, why now? But it is, for my experience with those two patients, they were vaping THC, which were fake. They were using not the regulated product, but from the dispensaries, but the ones which are made maybe in someone's basement or garage. So they are homemade products, and I believe that now that it is becoming more and more popular among teenagers, they choose a product which can be fake and cheaper, and that might be the problem.
I see. Now, we
because
did...
They are not regulated.
Okay. So we did reach out to Juul, one of the biggest e-cigarette manufacturers, to see if they could join us. They declined, but they sent us a statement that includes, quote, "We commend the CDC for its investigation, and we will continue to vigilantly monitor all reports. We have no higher priority than product safety, which is why we have implemented industry-leading quality controls." And then their statement goes on to say, that reporting also suggests that many patients were vaping THC. Regardless, those reports reaffirm the need to keep all tobacco nicotine products out of the hands of youth. And Juul underscores that they do not sell THC in their Juul cartridges. But Professor Jaspers, are you surprised by these sudden reports of a vaping-related illness?
I'm not exactly sure that all of this is just something that has been happening since July. Maybe Dr. Prezada can sort of comment on that. When I've been, we've been doing e-cigarette-related research for a couple of years now and have been giving talks at different institutions, and I usually ask the audience or physicians or healthcare providers within the audience, have you seen anybody that has come in that presented with cough or symptoms that are sort of very broadly describing respiratory-related illnesses. And very often I've heard from healthcare providers, these are respiratory therapists or pulmonologists, and they've said, yes, you know what, I've seen something like that. They sort of reported vaping, but I didn't really sort of, you know, pay much attention to this. So I think these cases, they may have been more isolated over the past 2, 3, 4 years, and more sort of dense in certain areas since June, July. But I think some of these cases have been here before, and it's just now there's increased awareness to make the link between vaping and these acute respiratory lung injuries.
I see. So actually, that leads me to what was going to be my next question, which is, I mean, there's a CDC and FDA, CDC-led investigation going on right now, but can we say for certain that we're calling it vaping-related, but can we say for certain at all that vaping is what's causing these illnesses?
Well, I think that's part of the investigation that CDC is doing right now. One of the problems that CDC is facing is when you look at electronic health records, which is one of the ways how you could actually do a systematic analysis of whether there was vaping, whether these injuries are vaping related or not. These electronic health records have very poor documentation of vaping and vaping history. And Dr. Prezada can probably comment a lot better on this than I do. When you look at sort of what physicians and healthcare providers, the options they have in terms of documenting, you know, vaping history, up until very recent, there's very little these, you know, in addition to doctor's notes, which have to be handwritten notes, there's not really a good drop-down menu, mm-hmm. there's no ICD-9 or 10 code that would give doctors the option, yes, this is vaping-related. It's not really classified in any kind of electronic health records.
I see. So, Dr. Perzada, would you like to comment on that?
Yes, yes. That's a very good point. As a matter of fact, we use one of the well-established electronic health record system called EPIC at NYU Winthrop. And what is happening is there is a smoke cessation, very strong, you know, you have to make sure that you ask after a certain age to all mm-hmm. our patients, smoking history, etc., but there is no vaping history. As a matter of fact, I was going to, that's one of my goal, that I'm going to talk to the EHR, EPIC people, and try to put that in. That's an extremely good point. Mm-hmm. Yes, it needs to be integrated to the electronic health records.
I see. Now, I'm looking at a joint statement here from the FDA and the CDC, and it says, it's quite lengthy, but a part of it says, more information is needed to better understand whether there's a relationship between any specific products or substances and the reported illnesses. At this time, there does not appear to be one product involved in all the cases, although THC and cannabinoids use has been reported in many cases. So, I mean, Dr. Prasad, I suppose there are a lot of people listening right now who might just want to know, should I be vaping or not? Should I just not use products with THC in it? I mean, what would you advise people?
Okay, so I'm a pediatric pulmonologist. I'm a clinician. And we know that anything you inhale which has chemicals in it is not good for you. So initially in 2007, when these e-cigarettes were created, they were catered towards people who are doing traditional smoking and would like to quit. Because as you know, nicotine is an addictive substance, and they would gradually convert into e-cigarette and then gradually wean off even the e-cigarette. But recently, this practice has been changed, and now all the youngsters, youth, even the middle school and high schoolers are thinking maybe that this is a cool thing, and even though they do not have nicotine addiction, they start to vape. So if you are not, you haven't started vaping, I would recommend very strongly not to start. And if you do, if you have started vaping and you are doing vaping, I would definitely go with the regulated product as far as THC and e-cigarette, and even try to come off, because now there is more and more evidence that is suggesting all these chemicals can have even long-term effect in the lungs.
Okay. So, Professor Jaspers, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I take a more potentially radical approach to this. I do think that e-cigarettes, while they were originally designed and invented for smoking cessation, I think from the get-go, they were marketed and distributed to really also attract, you know, young adults. When you look at the original sort of advertisement that was going on in 2008, 2009, with, you know, it was basically taking a page out of the tobacco industry playbooks, you know, having this sort of sex appeal, very, you know, very young, hip kind of people doing this. So with that, you are attracting not your 65-year-old COPD, you know, two packs a day smoker. You are actually attracting potentially new and young adults. So I think from the get-go, it was the market or the market that they're trying to explore and land was including young adults. Now, one of the things that's really really urgent now is you have a lot of these 14, 15, 16-year-old kids who, because they were attracted to Juul and other pod-based systems and the whole e-cig industry, they're now addicted to nicotine. And what do we do with these kids now? There is really nothing, not much that we can do for them in terms of really treating, pharmacologically treating their nicotine addiction and dependence. And that's something that's really urgently needed, because we now have a generation that is, as Dr. Prasada really said, we now have a generation that is nicotine addicted that would normally not have tried nicotine.
Right. And Professor Jaspers, if I may, I mean, you're not saying the word Juul, but I presume you really mean Juul because they're the big product here in the e-cigarette market. And if I can just return to a statement that we received from Juul. I mean, they emphasize that, quote, regardless of the fact that, first of all, that, as I mentioned before, that some of the patients were vaping THC. And Juul goes on to say, quote, regardless, those reports reaffirm the need to keep all tobacco and nicotine products out of the hands of youth through significant actions and regulation on access and enforcement. We must also ensure illegal counterfeit and copycat products, which may be made with unknown ingredients and under unknown standards, and those that deliver controlled substances, that those stay out of the market. So Juul there is saying, you know, they stand by their product, but that it might be these counterfeit products that potentially have THC in them that are the problem.
Well, that's all good. But I don't think, to be quite honest and to be very blunt, I don't think we would be in the situation that we have now had Juul not been invented and been on the market. So, yes, while they are now realizing this is probably a product, and I'm not going towards the safety of their product or the quality control of their product. I'm not doubting that. But what I am saying is I don't think we would have 20 to 25 or even 30% of high schoolers addicted to nicotine and using pod-based systems had Juul never been on the market. And there are a lot of the sort of copycat products now that are mimicking Juul because Juul has been so successful. So that's, you know, I think they're trying to do the best they can now, but I don't think we would be in the situation that we have now had Juul not been put on the market in 2016
or
2015.
Let's go to Tyler, who's calling from Sioux City, Iowa. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi. So my question was, how is it that...
Still with
I'm
us, Tyler?
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
Hi. I was wondering why these injuries were just happening now recently and in such a large amount, given that vapes have been around for over a decade, and there are many people who see improvement in lung function who've used it as a smoking cessation tool. And why is it that these injuries are only isolated to the United States of America? We're not seeing them in Europe when vaping is popular there as well.
Yeah, so this is a good question. Let me turn it back to our panel here. Tyler, thank you for your call. Dr. Prasada, Tyler's question about, have there been global incidences of this, or is it just located in the U.S.?
It seems like right now we are seeing it more in the U.S., but maybe they are not recognizing, just like Professor Jester's comment earlier. It might have been around, but because people are not thinking, they might have just thought that it is a different type of respiratory illness, an infectious type, or just a viral infection. So, yes, that's a very good question, but we might be recognizing it more now.
I see. Professor,
that it is related to vaping.
Yeah. Professor Jaspers, did you want to share your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So one of the big differences between the U.S. or the products that are allowed on the U.S. market and the products that are distributed on the European market is nicotine content. On the European market, from what I understand, no product is allowed that has more than 2% weight by volume nicotine content. Juul is at 5%, and a lot of the knockoff Juul products are up to 8% of nicotine. So nicotine content, Juul actually has a European product, which is at 1.5 or 1.7% nicotine, whereas the U.S. product is at 5% nicotine. So the products are actually slightly different, and what is being used in Europe is a different product than what we have in the U.S.
Okay.
So that could be the big difference. It's just a pure matter of dose.
Okay. Well, we are talking this hour about this mysterious, potentially vaping-related illness that's popped up in more than 200 people in the United States, prompting a CDC investigation into it. And we're joined today by Professor Ilana Jaspers. She is Professor of Pediatrics, Microbiology, and Immunology at at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Dr. Melody Prezada joins us as well. She's chief of pediatric pulmonology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in Long Island, New York. And we want to hear from you. What are your questions about this vaping-related illness? Is it just a matter of counterfeit products coming into the U.S. market, or do you have bigger questions about e-cigarettes overall? This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Xinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about this mysterious vaping-related illness that's popped up in the United States, prompting a CDC investigation. And we want to know what your questions are about it. Now, Juul is the big company in the e-cigarette world, and Juul Labs CEO Kevin Burns spoke to CBS This Morning last week about the CDC investigation and the fact that some of these severe lung diseases seem to be linked to the use of e-cigarettes. And here's what Burns said.
CDC is leading the investigations. We're obviously in close contact with them.
So you are?
Yeah.
You're working with them.
We'd like to get, they're in charge of the investigation. We'd like to get all the specifics that we can. We want to make sure we have access to the information. So if there's any issue that was driven associated with us, that we can get to the root cause and understand that.
That's Juul Labs CEO Kevin Burns. Now, former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb spoke to CNBC's Squawk Box team last week to talk about these mysterious illnesses. And here's what he said about his views on what he thinks is Juul's culpability here.
They bear responsibility here because they put these sticks in the hands of the kids, and now the kids are going out and buying these illegal pods. They can take steps to try to crack down on some of these counterfeit products themselves, but they can't re-engineer their product to not be
compatible
with these counterfeit products unless they file an application with FDA, because what they're stuck with is the product that they had on the market as of August of 2016. They could be bringing a new product on the market that might be foolproof against counterfeit pods, but they'd have to go through the application process, and so far they've been reluctant to do that.
That's former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. Let's go to Harrison, who's calling from Edgartown, Massachusetts. Harrison, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, thank you. My father has smoked cigarettes and marijuana for about 45 years. He ran into some lung-related issues, and thankfully he quit cigarettes, but he still continued to smoke pot. In an effort to help save any sort of health, he has since switched to the vaping products, which have THC in it. Is he actually better off just sticking with the plant-based product as opposed to the vape product? Thank you.
Harrison, thanks for your question. Professor Ilana Jaspers, you have a response for Harrison.
So this is an interesting question, and so chemically speaking, I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but sort of behaviorally speaking, when you smoke pot, you have a defined start and an end for your sort of pot smoking session. You have a joint, you start lighting it up, there is, 12, 15 hits per joint, and then you are done. With these vaping THC, devices, there's less of a defined start and an end. When you load your THC oils or waxes into your vaping device, you can get many, many, many more puffs than you would get out of a single joint. So the dose will probably change the number of puffs or the number of hits you take from vaping THC versus actually smoking a joint is going to be quite different. So I'm sort of not exactly sure how to address this, but this is something really to consider. And if you're one of the things you may want to ask your father is how many hits he actually takes now versus how many hits he took when he was just smoking a pure joint.
Mm. And Professor Jaspers, before we go any further, let me share my extreme apology to you that I keep mispronouncing your first name.
Don't worry.
For some reason, my brain is just not processing basic information properly today.
Do not worry about that.
It's Ilona Jaspers. Did I do it right that time?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, so Dr. Prasada, let me ask you a follow-up question to what Professor Jaspers said. I'm wondering about the actual oils or the chemicals that the nicotine is suspended in the pods, in the cartridges. Are those harmful or safe? Do we know?
No, they are actually quite harmful. In e-cigarette, there can be up to 50, 60 chemicals. So it is actually quite dangerous. But if we are talking about the THC for that person who is asking the question, it is really important. If he is going to do the vaping, he needs to get it from a dispensary, not go and just get it out in the street. Because that is what is making this very, very difficult for us.
Yep.
For our fake cartridge from the patient that we had, we sent it to the Department of Health, and initial results came back THC with vitamin E in it. Mm-hmm. And any kind of oil, when you start inhaling into your lungs, it can potentially cause lipoid pneumonitis, which is quite dangerous. And my recommendation would be to, if that's a very good point with the hits, but also if he is to continue vaping, it has to be from a licensed dispensary.
Right. Well, if I can just jump in here and say,
make sure it's a regulator.
Yeah, Dr. Prasada, forgive me for interrupting, but I completely take your point about buying the product from licensed dispensaries. But this is where, once again, we run into the issue of young people, right, of teenagers, because we have a lot of states raising the age of purchase to 21, and so where are they going to get it? Where do they usually get this stuff?
And also, for obvious reasons, these dispensaries, the product is much more expensive, so they would like to go for the cheaper product.
Mm.
Yes.
Well, let's go back to our callers. Let's go to Marley, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Marley, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling more on a personal perspective. I used to smoke a lot, and then I switched over to vaping. And I used to not be able to walk up a flight of stairs. Now I can run on a treadmill for 5 miles without stopping. And I do understand the point that your guest was making about how there is no real start and stop, like how with a cigarette, you light it, you stop, and then, you know, you wait till your next cigarette, where this can be continuous. But even so, with that, I still see an improvement in lung function. I still see an improvement in my overall, there's less fatigue throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of this conversation is focusing on the children that's getting to the hands of the kids, mm-hmm. which I think obviously is a huge problem and does need to be more regulated. But to just throw out the entire, it's like, oh, okay, so there's 200 cases that have been seen across the U.S. Vaping is now being demonized in a huge way. My state of New York is saying that now they want to ban any further vape shops from opening. And even though there are cigarettes in every single store, every single grocery store, I saw one at a Toys R Us once. I saw cigarettes being sold at Toys R Us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just don't think it's necessarily, I don't want to say fair, you know, to paint everything with a broad brush, but I do think that e-cigarettes are helping some people like myself.
Yeah. Well, Marley, actually, thank you very much for your call. And Professor Jaspers, let me turn back to you here. Is there a risk of an overreaction here?
So Marley, thank you so much for that call. I think that's actually a very, very good point you're bringing up. There have been a few clinical studies now looking at vaping as a cessation tool, and I have not seen anything that convinces me that it is a really effective and long-term way of getting people off of nicotine. But, you know, again, we're early in the process, and I would love to be convinced otherwise.
Well, Professor, can I just jump in here? Because we did also reach out to the Vaping Technology Association. Mm-hmm. They're the trade group for e-liquid e-cigarettes, et cetera. They sent us also a lengthy statement, and in fairness, the beginning of it, they strongly encouraged this federal investigation to go on and be comprehensive. But then they also say that, quote, importantly, major medical groups and governments have conclusively determined that vapor products are 95% safer than combustible cigarettes. And studies have shown that they are nearly twice as effective at helping adults quit smoking than traditional methods.
Okay, so I didn't mean to sort of jump in there, but I'm sorry. So those two statements came from the UK. And the 95% state of safer statement came from Public Health England, which basically used very early first-generation e-cigarettes and looked at the number and concentrations of known carcinogens that are in cigarettes and basically compared them to what came out of an e-cigarette. An e-cigarette had 95% less of these chemical carcinogens. That's not a fair comparison, because it's a very different product. Why would you assume that the same things are coming out of an e-cigarette as they are coming out of a cigarette? So that statement was made way back in 2015 by Public Health England. The other study that was cited by the vaping is twice as effective as cigarette or as other conventional products. That is also a clinical study that was conducted in the UK, where e-cigarettes actually increased the number of people having successful cessation from 10% to 18%, or 9.9% to 18%. The problem in that study was that after a year, the 18% that had used e-cigarettes are still nicotine dependent, whereas the people that use conventional therapies actually completely kicked the nicotine dependence. So I think we need to really carefully look at these clinical trials and look at these data and look at these statements before, you know, we sort of use them with a broad stroke. Now, having said that, I don't want to sort of throw e-cigarettes completely out as a potential cessation tool for those, like the caller from New York, for those who really use them effectively as a cessation tool. I do think that they may have a place in our society to do that, but it needs to be regulated in that fashion and cannot be just accessible to everyone without having any kind of, you know, prescription, for lack of a better term.
Well, and our caller Marley from New York was also concerned about people who use e-cigarettes becoming demonized by this process and did not want that to happen, for sure. Let's go to Daniel, who's calling from Annapolis, Maryland. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing all right. What's your comment?
Hello?
Yeah, we're with you, Daniel. What's your comment?
Yeah, I've been involved in manufacture of cigarette juice, and there is more nicotine in these new pod systems of 20 times what a regular vapor would vape. Typically, it's suspended in vegetable glycerin and propylene glycol, which can be found in a lot of inhalation medicine.
Yeah. Daniel, I'm so sorry to cut you off there, but your line is really shaky, and I think people might have had a tough time hearing you. So let me turn to Dr. Prasada here and say that Daniel was saying that he has worked in the e-cigarette, in the vaping industry, and he believes that the new pods have a much higher concentration of nicotine, and that is what he thinks is causing these illnesses. Your thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, I do not have any comment on that because the patients I took care, they did not have nicotine issue. It was all THC. Uh-huh. But I would imagine, I'm going to ask Professor Jester, who seems to have more experience with nicotine area, and get her thoughts on this because I cannot comment on the nicotine content on e-cigarettes.
Sure. Professor Jaspers, go ahead.
Yeah, so the first e-cigarettes that came on the market had about 1.2 to 3.6% nicotine, and in a regular cigarette, it's about weight by volume, about 1.5. And these Juul has 5% to 6%, and these new sort of knockoff pod systems have up to what I've seen now lately, 8%. That's a ridiculous high amount of nicotine that should not be allowed. I mean, it's ridiculously high.
And so it suddenly occurs to me, you know, a lot of the concern, the public health concerns around conventional cigarettes was with those combustion products and not only mm-hmm. what they do to the lungs of the person yep. smoking the cigarette, yep. but that secondhand smoke.
Yep.
Do we know of what health effects, if any, the vapor coming out of e-cigarettes might have to as a secondhand source?
Yeah, that's yes. a really interesting point and really an open question. And I think there's a handful of articles that have reported health effects linked to secondhand vaping exposure. There certainly should be because, I mean, these are aerosols that are going to be exhaled right. to some amount and they're going to be inhaled by the person next to the vapor. So it's not been investigated enough. That's a really, really good question.
Dr. Prasada, I heard you there.
Most likely there is going to be a link because there are ultra-fine particles which are going to be released with the vaping, and if you are next to that person, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I believe that there will be issues with that down the line.
So you believe it, but we don't yet have sort of conclusive studies around that. It's an area...
Not yet, but it is a common sense that if you are vaping and there is the smoke coming out with all these chemicals in it, the person who is next to you will be inhaling it too.
Okay.
So I believe that there will be an issue.
I want to sneak one last call in here. Kamel is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Kamel, you're on the air. We've got about 30 seconds, but see if we can get your comment in here.
Hi, very briefly. My 19-year-old son experienced a situation where he was vaping with friends. He passed out, had a sustained heart rate of 170 beats per minute in the ER for 7 hours. It was quite scary, and the ER doctor said he would have gone into cardiac arrest had we not been there to catch him when he passed out and call 911. So from a parent perspective, it's quite alarming, and there needs to be increased education pertaining to what you're getting. A lot of times, these kids don't know what they're smoking.
Right. Yep. Kamel, yep. It's a great point. Thank you so much for calling. I hope your yes. son's doing all right. Professor Jaspers, we've got 30 seconds left here. What do you think about what Kamel said?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's been actually a study that came out where it was a questionnaire, and they actually questioned, you know, the demographic that her son is in, whether, what they're vaping, and about 40% of the kids basically answered, no, I'm just vaping flavors and water. Yet their urine analysis showed that they had high nicotine metabolites. So a lot of the kids don't even know that they're vaping high nicotine products and slowly or actually pretty rapidly become addicted to nicotine.
Well, meanwhile, as I mentioned, we're seeing a lot of states raising the e-cigarette buying age to 21. And just very recently, Michigan became the first state to ban those flavored e-cigarettes. So a lot of attention to this on the state and federal level. Professor Ilona Jaspers, Professor of Pediatrics, Microbiology and Immunology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Melody Prasada, Chief of Pediatric Pulmonology at NYU Winthrop Hospital on Long Island. Dr. Prasada, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.